Here we go again. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. Back in our bunker, back in Prospect House now after Norwich City, sort of their final pre-season game. And obviously they've got a game on Tuesday against Cambridge, but the last one that any of us will be able to watch. So I think we can couch it in those terms. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt and Adam Harvey. And if you can see a bit of a downbeat look on our faces and maybe a sense of that in our tone as well, you'll understand why, because there is more, yet more injury concern for Norwich City off the back of a 2-1 pre-season defeat to Osasuna this afternoon. It started off in a sun-kissed Carrow Road and there were suitably gloomy clouds gathering as we left, Paddy.
Carrow Road,
yeah. New sign that I've managed to find in the back of the cupboard as well to add to our, I don't know, what can we call it, a set? It's more a gathering of items or tat, depending on how you look at it. But Paddy, that's there's no other place to start, really. Ali Ahmed, huge blow.
Yeah, and worth caveating right to start, Connor, that we're 2 hours on from the final whistle. We've done what we needed to after the game and then headed straight up the hill to our headquarters. And things will develop now over the next 48 hours or so in terms of the gravity of the injury and then the potential layoff as a result of. So, we're coming from a standpoint in the conversation that, we don't know the full extent of it. But, maybe we've seen enough injury episodes around Norwich players in recent seasons to know it feels like it's going to be a bad one. Philippe Clement, I think, is who's a better guide right now. His demeanour, his body language, you can see now. I think that interview will be up on our Pinken channels. And everything he said and everything he didn't say in terms of how he conveyed the messaging suggested it was going to be bad news. He said, I think Ali felt something in his knee, and whenever a player says that, it's never a good initial signal. But, we live in hope. But, he was, diagnosed on the pitch and then helped off hobbling but supported either side under his arms by, medical and physio types straight down the tunnel. But, my mind wanders to, maybe Antti Cernak as a pertinent parallel to draw here, who, similarly suffered a bad injury at Derby last season. That was, I think it was September, October.
October, yeah.
And we never saw him again for the rest of the season. And, that was, cruciate ligament damage. But as I say, we're not going to get into speculations on it's a knee injury, what type of knee injury, how severe is a knee injury. Suffice to say, it would appear that Ali Ahmed is going to join the list of long-term injuries at Norwich in recent seasons, and it's terrible news for him, first and foremost, but also it throws up some serious dilemmas now for Norwich and in terms of their squad depth or lack of. And obviously it continues now, sadly, and we thought it wasn't going to be the theme moving forward because of, and we've talked about this at length on previous podcasts, processes and personnel changes to try and shed that narrative of injury, almost handbrake in terms of what Norwich are trying to do to their squad. Well, that's here, and that's still sadly a major factor in play because it follows on now from no Kellen Fisher, no Jovan McCarman, no Lucien Mahovo for the start of the season. And it continued again today, no Antti Cernak, no Papa Diallo. Papa Diallo, of course, is increasingly a big figure in this because he plays in the same area of the pitch as Ali Ahmed, but he hasn't been seen in pre-season. So, you pull all the strands together, it feels like yet more adverse headwinds in terms of injuries and, for it to happen again in that manner, a lad who'd, had his post-World Cup break after his exploits with Canada. He came back last week of training. He's can be no more than 5 minutes on the pitch in that second half and then, trying to adjust his body to bring a long diagonal under control, and it's just, from my vantage, looked like his leg got stuck in the turf, and that's never a good one. My mind went immediately to, and again, only in terms of the feeling, it was when Michael Owen did his injury playing for England. I think it was a World Cup against Sweden, and no player actually near him. He just again tried to twist and his leg got caught in the turf, and I think that was a bad one. So, but as I say, keep having to repeat, we don't know the extent of Ali Ahmed's injury at this stage, but I think we're all probably of a mind it's going to be months rather than days, and if that is the case, then yeah, throws up a lot of now new questions and dilemmas for Messrs. Clement, Napa, Dunn, and above them the ownership group as well, because it may force their hand now in terms of what remains of this transfer window.
Yep, and we will unpick those threads as we go. I mean, from what I can see, there are probably three, there'll probably be more that we'll come up with as well to unpick here, Adam. And I think the first one is the human element to this, because as Paddy said, he's just come fresh, literally fresh off the back of a home World Cup. All of the adulation and joy and pride that comes out of that. Obviously, it was a historic tournament for Canada in terms of how far they got. I got the sense there was probably a little bit of frustration they didn't get further. But he had an injury prior to that point, and for him to come back and play was an extraordinary story. Then, obviously, he has, what, about 3-4 weeks of a break. Then he returns. Then he's had a full-week training. Probably feel like, right, first full season in the Championship, you want to hit the ground running. He did some good stuff towards the, since he came in, really, in January, in terms of creatively, and was one of the big figures that helped Norwich, from their attacking perspective, link some of that and push up the table. From a human perspective, that blow is going to be seismic.
Yeah, he's probably going to need his teammates and those around him at Colney to try and push him through it, because for everything you just outlined there, kind of the journey that he's been on to, you know, step away from home everywhere that he sort of knows. He's, you know, lived in Vancouver and Toronto for the whole of his sort of, you know, life up to this point, and to then, you know, bring that across to England and having to settle in so quickly. And, you know, we know from sort of previous times that moves in January can be difficult sometimes, because you've got to adapt straight away, not only to the league, but all the off the pitch stuff. And he seemingly managed to do that pretty well. And, you know, his goal contributions last season proved that. I think he got 7 over the piece, and you know, that was a team that was starting to go upwards maybe in terms of their trajectory, but he was a key part in that eventual move towards the end of the season, where they were close to, you know, being on the cusp of the playoff push, maybe until the latter stages of the campaign. So yeah, to then go off and have the World Cup, which will be, you know, one of the pinnacles of a player's career, and a home one as well, is probably the pinnacle of a career, you know, playing at the stadiums that he's played in throughout his career to date, and then to return, as you say, to try and be a key figure in this what's hoped to be, and I think many people feel that tilt towards the top 8 this season to try and get themselves eventually back to the Premier League, and he felt like someone who could have been a key asset in that, in some of those attacking areas, because of some of the limited availability they have. You know, Papa Diallo's on the way back, and he's, you know, probably not going to be available for some of the early games of the season, so it felt like Ahmed would have had a decent shot of being a, you know, starter, and to now, yeah, unfortunately looks like he's going to be on the sidelines for quite a number of months. It's going to be difficult for him, and there's plenty of players, unfortunately, in that Norwich City squad that have been in a similar camp to him, and yeah, maybe they can give him a little bit of advice and just try and push him through.
Yes, yeah, so that's the human aspect, and I guess there's a football aspect as well to overlay, Paddy, which we'll do in a moment, but also I guess because of the injury narrative generally, and it's well set now at Norwich City, we all know it, as you say, we spent too many hours in this room speaking about injuries and the various nature of them last season. I wrote this last week, I think, but fans don't care. They don't care if it's contact, they don't care if it's muscular, they do care if it's an injury. But we do have to mention that these aren't, I mean, what can you do, and you mapped it out there, to prevent what happened this afternoon where Ahmed is trying to pluck a ball out of the sky. I don't really see what anyone can do. Medical staff, I think you can have all the medical staff and all the facilities at Colney and the recovery pool and all of that stuff. I'm not sure any of that prevents what we saw this afternoon. Contact injuries are always going to be a part of football. So I get the same narrative is being overlaid, and ultimately maybe there'll be people watching this screaming at us and saying it doesn't matter anyway because they're injured. But this is worth stressing, this is a different kind of injury situation to what they were battling with for the majority of last season.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter, the mitigating factors. The bottom line is they're going to be without Ali Ahmed, they are without Kellen Fisher, Lucy Movo, and Jovan Mikama. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, if that is a debate, which is kind of where's the culpability lie, you know, is it the club and people at the club aren't doing their jobs to the degree that they need to do them to avoid this. I think that's a redundant argument, really, or a redundant debate, because certainly this summer, I mean, that is now the third injury that's occurred in a game state. You know, Mukama has suffered a problem with his foot in that second behind closed doors game.
Yeah.
And likewise, Lucy Mahovo, that was a very heavy challenge he took. And, you know, they could have navigated pre-season without any of these episodes, got to the first game of the season, league game of the season against West Brom, and any of those incidents could have occurred in that game. And what do you do? What do you do? It's just, you know, it is part and parcel, as Philippe said post-match today. A very disappointed, a very frustrated, I'm sure, head coach. You know, I looked immediately when Ali Ahmed went down, and he buried his head in his hands and turned away. Because he knows, you know, he's been around the game for very, very many years, and players, coaches, they know when they see an incident unfold like that and they see the reaction of the player immediately, they know it's a bad one. And, you know, I certainly don't think, again, if we're looking at kind of this issue that has rightly been questioned, because it was questioned by, you know, sporting director Ben Napper. You know, he said, Mark Attanasio alluded to it in some of his, you know, public-facing media in the last 12, 18 months, that there have been probably legitimate concerns in terms of player welfare within that, player management of injury, player rehabbing, maybe even load in terms of, you know, what they were doing day-to-day training-wise. And they were acknowledged by the people who are in the club who are shaping what they're trying to do as a club. So that was fair. And I think we'd all be of the same mind. But I think this latest cycle for me is different. And because in the intervening period, they have tried to change the processes this summer. They have tried and continue to do that in terms of changing the personnel. You know, Dr. Paul Ford coming in and some real groundwork has been laid. But I think we said recently that wasn't going to immediately overnight mean that they now no longer have any issues in terms of injuries or player unavailability. You just hope it's a gradual evolutionary process, which in seasons to come and portions of seasons to come means they do have more of their key players fit and available for Clermont as it is now. So, yeah, for me, anybody who wants to sort of link what's happened today with Ahmed or with Mukama or with Kellen Fisher or, you know, Lucy Mahovo with what's gone previously in terms of what on earth is going on that these players continue to break down or they can't rehab them properly. For me, that seems misguided, I think. It isn't another link in the chain, what we've seen with these three or four injuries. It is, unfortunately, part and parcel of a high contact sport and that desire at this time of year to try and manage load, manage minutes, build fitness levels up. It's just very, very unfortunate. And, you know, you don't want to make light of it, but it feels like there maybe is a curse of some description which needs lifting because, you know, they will go into a season now without arguably, Motore might have an argument, but arguably their first choice striker, their first choice left back, their first choice right back, and now potentially, you know, a starter on the left hand side. So you're talking there four actual genuine bona fide players for the 11 who could have lined up against West Brom, and that's going to challenge any head coach. So, you know, the good thing is Philippe Clermont had plenty of experience of that over the first 6 months of his tenure. I'm sure he would have hoped that wasn't going to be the case at the start of it this season, but it is going to be the case. So I guess, you know, as he navigated a path through last season and still continued to pick up results and performances, that is the challenge he now faces again, starting with MK in the League Cup next week.
And a huge part of this, Adam, and conversations around injury generally, particularly the type that we've seen here today, the knee injury that Ali Ahmed has sustained, and also those contact issues as well, it's luck, isn't it? And however you cut it, and whatever the scientific reasons behind it or not, Norwich just aren't getting any of that in the fitness department.
No, they're not. And it's frustrating because they clearly have tried to address the muscular and soft tissue problems that they endured so much last season. And I think, you know, rightfully maybe so from a fan's perspective, they were criticised for that because there was far too many, and, you know, you can't hide that. And I think that is the argument maybe those within the club would make, that, you know, barring Errol Mundell-Smith, who's had a minor hamstring problem, it has felt like this pre-season they had sort of managed to get to grips with that a little bit, and maybe there were less of those sort of types of injuries that were starting to occur. And given the sort of schedule they've been under in terms of training load and double sessions and, you know, the amount of games as well in terms of pre-season minutes and just getting back into kind of fitness generally, you know, they have done well to kind of navigate that. But what they didn't really have too much last season was contact injuries, and it feels like they're now starting to get quite a run of those. And unfortunately, they are by nature just due to contact, and you can't help those. It is frustrating. It's really, really frustrating because some of the players that are now missing are key assets, and they're all going to be on the sidelines for some of those opening games of the season in the Championship. And I think when you want to hit the ground running, given the momentum that Norwich had off the back of last season and maybe the expectations and the hopes from within, and also, you know, the fan base as well, about what this season could potentially have in store, to then have so many key players, you know, not unavailable for some of the opening games. Yeah, it is really, really, really frustrating. And I'd back Philippe Clement to find solutions, and unfortunately they're probably going to have to now dip into the market to try and replace that wider area, because they are going to be a bit light, particularly, well, given kind of the other players that are in those areas that are unavailable at the moment as well. So, we'll leave that to those that matter within the football club. But, yeah, as much as it will get a lot of criticism, unfortunately there's not a lot Norwich can do about it.
Yeah, I just don't see how anyone could have prevented what happened this afternoon. Look, we will come on to in terms of what next and what it means. And I get the sense from what you guys have said, maybe where you guys are going to head in that direction. But I think the final point I'd make on kind of this, Fred, if we're going to layer it like that, Paddy, is you are a little bit, if you're Norwich at the moment, damned if you do, damned if you don't, on the injury theme generally, because you've got players there like Antti Sihanouk, like Papamoudou Diallo, and Andre Brooks, maybe you could push in this as well. Motore maybe now as well, that he's come back from a World Cup, where people want to see them. They want to see them playing. They want to see them building up rhythm, building up fitness for the start of the new season. But equally, there's the other side where if you then do push them too much and they break down, you're going to feed this kind of narrative and perception that is growing about fitness. It's a difficult balancing act that they've got at the moment to strike with these players who are either just coming back from injury or who are still having to be managed for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, Sihanouk is the prime example there because, you know, again, after the game this afternoon, because there was, Philip had indicated to us earlier in pre-season that the game last night, Friday night, in Boreham Wood, ostensibly a 21s game, but that was earmarked for Antti to get his first minutes of the summer. And he didn't feature. And the reason being, Philippe said that, you know, that then would have had a detrimental knock-on impact in terms of the training blocks he could have done in the next few days leading into next week. So now the plan, the new plan is for him to clearly get those training blocks in, because he wasn't involved on Friday night. And then he will be involved Tuesday coming, Cambridge United, behind closed doors at Colney. And maybe that trade-off you're alluding to there, Connor, is for him. You can read Papa as well, and maybe one or two others, Mo maybe as well now. So that, you know, they could push these players, but then if these players do have an adverse reaction and a setback, and I also think maybe what's happening with those players is probably in part dictated by the fact that they've lost numbers now in other areas of the squad. They just simply cannot afford for any more injuries, sadly, and that was the case today prior to, but unfortunately they've got another one now with Ali. But, you know, I think that would open up to criticism if, hypothetically, an Antti or a Papa had been pushed too early in pre-season, had broken down, were out then for a more extended period of time. Gabe Forsyth is another one. He's slightly different in terms of he's had a much longer period on the sidelines, but the suggestion is that, you know, maybe he's now in a space where he can be pushed, but I'm pretty sure they'll be very cautious with him as well, because, as I say, you know, that has been what's thrown at this club in recent times, is that they haven't managed players back from injury well enough and made them robust enough and able to handle the load of training, but also the championship, which, as we know, is a very, very demanding league to operate in. And consequently, you know, they've then had to deal with the criticism that's come their way. So for me, entirely, I have no issues with them. If it is an erring on the side of caution with a Cernac, with a Diallo, and maybe one or two others, then I think that is the right way to go. And particularly when you overlay the fact that they're now accumulating far too many injuries to key frontline players as we reach the sort of the back end of pre-season. So, yeah, if the mark of Antti Cernac, for example, this season is how many games he plays and how much can he impact it, then not being available for Osasuna today or St Gallen or Wimbledon or any of the other links in the pre-season chain so far, I don't think matter too much if that approach pays off by meaning he's available to play a good chunk of the season and also impact it in a positive way as well. And the same with Papa Diallo as well. You know, you look at his Norwich timeline since he came in this time last summer, and again, you know, muscular injury after muscular injury, it's felt like. So they need to get him to a point where he is robust enough, physically able to handle the load that is placed on him. Otherwise, his 12 months in green and yellow would tell you that he won't be able to withstand the rigours that are coming in very short order. So, yeah, I think the way those players are being handled is the correct way, because it's been proven with those and with others that when they've gone a different route, it's ended with them being out for even longer. And that's detrimental to the player. It's detrimental to the head coach who's in post at the time. And ultimately, it's detrimental to Norwich, who take Cernac and Diallo, two very highly rated young players who they committed quite a sizable amount of funds from Norwich's perspective anyway. And they haven't probably had the returns they would have hoped yet. And that needs to turn. And likewise, you could throw Jurasek into that equation as well. You know, these are players who, for various reasons, haven't played anywhere near enough minutes in green and yellow to justify what the club committed to them. So, you know, and part of that is down maybe to adjusting to the English football, but equally, and probably a greater part, is physically they're not being able to meet the requirements of what is needed to play in the championship. So, you know, something has to change, and hopefully with Jurasek they get into a point where that dial is tilting in a more favourable light, and that he will be available, and then we can see if he has the technical ability or the technical quality to influence in a positive fashion what Norwich are trying to do this season. But equally, Cernac, equally Diallo. So, you know, for me, if it's a question mark about are they managing those players in the right way, then I would say absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it is, as we say, a little bit damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, is there a point, Adam, around kind of the recruitment over the past couple of years and the fact, you know, you've got players coming in from a whole host of leagues and suddenly they're threat, I recognise, not relevant in this example, but when you're looking at trends more general and muscle issues, you tend to associate with load, and Paddy's spoken about that a little bit. Is there a point around the recruitment strategy generally and going abroad and bringing players in that are having to adapt then to a different type of league physically, the intensity of it, the relentlessness of it? Does that pose a potential challenge, do you think, in terms of their overall squad picture?
Yeah, quite plausibly. You know, you do contrast generally European and sort of other leagues across the world, and it isn't Saturday, Tuesday like it is in the Championship, and it's the amount of miles and you know, the amount of load that these players have to go under. And I think, you know, certainly under Philippe Clement as well, the training schedule is very brutal. They don't get, you know, loads and loads of days off, maybe like they have in previous regimes under different head coaches. And I think it probably does take a bit of a toll, and maybe that was a bit of a realisation this summer, and hence why Norwich have made a bit of a reshuffling of the pack in terms of some of their medical and sports science department. And yeah, as I say, it had seemingly started to bear a little bit of fruit, just in terms of the lack of muscular injuries maybe, or minimising them over the course of pre-season has generally started to trend the right way. But yeah, I think you have got to maybe look at that recruitment element and maybe sort of have that as a bit of a factor, because the Championship is a very unique division in terms of a lot of factors, really, just in terms of the play styles of different teams, but also, yeah, in terms of the schedule. And some of the players maybe that have come over previously have had injury problems at sort of the clubs they've been at. So to then drop them into the Championship environment and expect them to thrive and play week in, week out with the amount of workload that they've been put under maybe was a bit naive. So, yeah, I think that's maybe the benefits of some of the recruitment work they've done this summer. You know, that two of the three players that have arrived through the door are Championship sort of proven to a degree. I know Brooks obviously had an injury at the back end of last season, but I think, you know, generally he has managed to keep himself relatively fit. Sam Field's got a pretty decent injury sort of record as well from his time at QPR. So maybe that is kind of the realisation. And that's kind of why I guess Norwich do have a big squad, and it is good that they have in some respects, because in maybe previous times when they had a little bit more of a smaller cohort, they might have struggled a bit more. So, yeah, hopefully they can get to the bottom of some of the other issues that they have. But, yeah, you can't help the contact elements of it. And, yeah, maybe they'll future summers factor in some of the recruitment they do and sort of maybe look a little bit more domestically around players that are, yeah, aware of the demands of the Championship.
Just before we segue into part two, Paddy, and we'll speak more about kind of the transfer implications, if there are any of this. Very quickly, Pelle Mattsson not involved again today, but that, from what Philippe was saying and kind of what we heard pre-game, thankfully doesn't sound like a serious one that's going to bleed into the start of the season.
No, he was very quick to shut that one down. Yeah, he said, I think he'd be back in training after the next couple of days. Absolutely nothing to worry about. I think hip-related, I think he was saying, but by all accounts has had an injection in there. I know we got into it on the team news pre-match, and you know, I was of the opinion that, you know, it's still not good when a player as crucial as Mattsson is requiring kind of an injection to settle something down, you know. But, you know, let's take our measure from what Philippe had to say. And if that is the case, then that would suggest absolutely no question marks around his availability for both MK and West Brom in the next two weekends.
Good stuff. Right, we'll hit pause there and then we'll come back. And I think I know where these lads are going, but we'll talk about the potential implications of that Ali Ahmed injury this afternoon. See you in a moment. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, recording after their sort of final pre-season game against Osasuna at Carrow Road this afternoon. A 2-1 defeat for the Canaries, but probably the biggest story was that injury blow to Ali Ahmed. And Paddy and Adam still with me. No sort of niggles or issues in that first half? No, all okay, good. Glad to hear it. We need some positive news on that front. Adam, I guess naturally where, and this is the third strand of this, we kind of dealt with some of the other ones in the first half, will be the what next element to this. And that's where a lot of Norwich fans will immediately be going in their heads, because you look at what they've got available. We've spoken about some of those who aren't available at the moment. You've got Andre Brooks, who at the moment seems able to play 45 minutes, as you say, managing him, and he had an injury at the back end of last season, but 2 weeks before the season, not ideal. You've got Oscar Schwartau, who probably isn't what we would describe as an out-and-out winger. And I think when you compare him to Ahmed, does a very different job in terms of creativity and those things, and probably is better and is going to be a number 10 at some stage. And you've got Mateo Jurasek, who himself has had plenty of issues, and we don't need to reopen that particular book at this stage. So where does that leave Norwich City in your mind? If you are sat in Ben Napper's chair this evening, are you weighing up a pursuit and a foray back into the transfer market?
Yeah, I would be pretty quickly, I think, on the various sort of platforms they have in terms of their recruitment. Clearly have lists, you know, of players, and long lists of players of different positions that are always kind of ready in scenarios such as this, whether it's a case of injury. You know, sometimes you maybe get a player that you don't expect to bid for, or an exit you maybe don't expect, and you have got to react. And I think it would be very naive if Norwich didn't do something now in that area, because as much as we don't know the full extent of Ali Ahmed's injury, I think we all expect that it is going to be months. And the reality is, with the players and the sort of situation we've just mapped out there, they do feel quite light. And I know Oscar Schwartau obviously played on the left today, and I thought he was pretty anonymous generally across the first sort of period of the game, particularly first half. Yeah, I almost forgot he was playing, and I think that maybe was a... yeah, indicative maybe of kind of the sort of player that he is, and certain games and certain sort of teams and styles of play maybe suit him better, where Norwich were getting a lot more joy down the other flank with Brooks, just in terms of pace and, yeah, what he can bring. I think they probably do need another option more now of that ilk on the other side, because with all the other injuries and issues they've got, they don't really have a type now to be able to do that job. So, yeah, maybe the injury, there's never a good time, but I guess kind of now that some of the Premier League clubs have got other sort of World Cup contingents returning, maybe some of their younger players will now become more freely available for loan moves to the Championship. You generally sort of see a trend where clubs in the second division will start bringing in Premier League loans later on in the window. And I think that probably feels like maybe the best avenue for where Norwich are at, because they don't really need another permanent addition, but, you know, loan addition for a 6 months or maybe even a season, with kind of the view then of getting it to January and sort of reassessing where they're at, that feels like maybe the best route to go with this, because you look at maybe some of the younger lads in the academy and there's some good players in there, but they don't really feel ready. You know, Philippe sort of admitted that at the back end of last season, he didn't sort of feel that there was anybody there that could step up and make a mark in the Championship at this time. And, you know, you don't want to sort of kill these young players before they're sort of ready to, yeah, hit the ground running in such a, yeah, grueling league as the Championship is. So I would be anticipating, I think, probably that the left back's not going to be the only incoming piece of business now.
It's funny, isn't it, how transfer windows work, Paddy, because you can set for, or you can plan for one set of circumstances. Something like today happens and it completely needs a pivot. Are you with Adam? Do you think it will now be and have to be a transfer solution to this issue? Because Norwich have ended the game with Liam Gibbs out wide, which, you know, Liam Gibbs is versatile and is reliable and certainly can do a job in most positions, but probably not where you want to be heading into a Championship season.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, they went into this summer clearly as a group of, you know, head coach, recruitment staff, sporting director, assistant sporting director. And I'd identified a glaring omission on the right-hand side of the attacking three and were willing to commit serious funds, and they did, for Andre Brooks, because they didn't feel that, evidently, that profile of player was at Clermont's disposal. So for me now, you shine the mirror to the opposite side of the attacking three. Have they got available, with the asterisks, we don't still know the extent of Ali Ahmed's injury, but have they? And, you know, you could debate Jallo, but Jallo hasn't kicked the ball in pre-season. And even if he does come in towards the back end or maybe into the season proper, could you actually say, no, we don't need to do any business because we've got this guy now and this guy will last the course and distance? You simply can't, on the evidence of his first 12 months. So you almost have to take him out of the equation. That then leaves, for me, Oscar Schwartau. Oscar Schwartau is a good young player, but I don't think he's necessarily, for me, offering the same profile as Andre Brooks on the right. And if that's, and it clearly is, because what did Philippe go and do in January? He brought in Ali Ahmed. Ali Ahmed and Papa Diallo are much more aligned with an Andre Brooks type attacking wide player in the threes position. So they simply don't have that now available, I don't think. Not in terms of plugged in, fully ready to go, up to speed, can handle the load that is required. And if that is the case, and it was such a priority on the right-hand side at the start of the summer, which it was, then it now becomes equally an area of pressing need on the left. But I agree with Adam. I don't think financially they're in any position that they can go and explore a permanent deal. And that's setting aside, do they need a permanent? Because obviously...
Just sorry to jump in there, but just explain, because yeah, I can hear people going, but they sold Josh Sargent for X amount. Just explain why that might not
be. We'll
be
here all night if we have to get into that, my man. If we have to break down...
Just give us
financial...
a very brief... But of why that is, because that's going to be the response that people will have to that about financial and why
they spent
don't
they spent
that.
£8 million on Andre Brooks. £8 million. And they certainly didn't start this window with, what was Sargent, 17 million, we'll say. We'll pluck that figure out. They didn't start this window with £17 million burning a hole in their pocket. Go back to this time last summer, just prior to Nunes's departure. I think they were 8, 9 million in deficit in terms of their transfer outlay vis-a-vis what they'd brought in. They obviously bring in money for Nunes, but then look what they did in January. Look at the players they signed. And then at the start of this window, they've done a permanent deal for Sam Field. So, you know, I'm not sat here, in a sort of a Kieran Maguire style trying to sort of defend Norwich and their financial strategy. But the reality is, quite simply, there is no Josh Sargent-sized hole sat in a coffers at Carrow Road that they can go to, open the vault and take the money out. Because if they had, they would have spent it by now, I can guarantee you that, because of the ambition that Clement clearly has for this club, this group of players, for himself, for his coaching staff. If the funds were there, they would have spent them. The funds aren't there, clearly, and that will be underlined, I think, in terms of where they go, be it left-hand side of the attacking three or left-hand side of the defence, which, interestingly, and we'll probably get into this, it feels like that is now moving, judged on Clement's post-match comments today to us. So the reality is that there isn't any Josh Sargent, you know, sized bag of money that they can now pivot and go and get. I mean, you know, there was this talk about, you know, Harry Amass apparently in recent days might be available for a sum in the region of 6 million. Norwich do not have £6 million to pay for Harry Amass or any other player for that matter. That is the reality of it. And, you know, underpinning all of that is the new cost rules that are in place this summer for the first time in the Championship. You know, squad cost ratio rules. Go and just look at some of the parameters that means Norwich have to work with in terms of what they can spend is more or less indexed to what they generate, with obviously some owner equity on the side. But, you know, that doesn't afford them the ability to go and spend millions and millions of pounds from here. But I think the reality is they don't have millions and millions of pounds to spend. And, you know, you're a fan, you don't want to hear that. But you know, we speak to enough of these people who are involved, who are driving these processes inside the club. You know, we got some very good access last week when we was at their training base in London, and you know, the messaging could not be clearer that they do not have tens and tens of millions or 6, 7, 8 million pounds to spend on players. That's the reality of it. And you know, we can debate it all we want, but you know, I would be surprised if the remaining business, singular or plural, amounts to a huge amount, because, you know, okay, there's a necessity now maybe to do something, but they're going to have to be very creative. What I think will be in play, and again, it's another strand of this, he's also confirmed to us, which we knew, again, from the people we'd spoken to at that London camp, that Yakov Medic and Amankwa Forson are not part of his setup moving forward. Philippe said today they would listen to offers for those players. That is obviously going to be, hopefully, an avenue where they can generate some funds. And that then may allow them to go back into the market and do something. But, you know, the reality is it's probably going to take a sale or two to give them that financial freedom to be able to do something. Because that, as it was badged to us, it would be a left-back. And it wouldn't be a left-back for huge sums. It could potentially still be a left-back on loan. We know that's in play as well as an avenue to bring in a player. But I don't want to keep repeating myself, but the money isn't there. And you know, you only have to go respectfully back to what they did last two or three windows. Look at what they sold, look at what they bought. And even with that, you know, being on the inside and knowing every nuance of these deals, I think we know the headline figures. They tend to work their way into the public domain. That will quite clearly tell you that they're pretty much spending what they've brought in. And that's even before you get into the wages and the contractual elements that go with it as well. So that's the reality. There isn't a bag of money lying around that Ben Napper can now go and access to bring in either a left winger or a left back.
No, and you mentioned him. I did a chat with Kieran Maguire earlier in the summer when he spoke a little bit about this. The majority of Championship clubs lose money, which means even when you have a Josh Sargent deal, which was favourable in terms of structure, and they got a lot of that up front pretty quickly, that doesn't mean that you get 17 million and it all goes into a transfer pot. It might actually be that X amount goes in the transfer pot and bits go in to fill holes of debt, and they've done works at Carrow Road, that kind of thing, which I think has been ownership funded by all accounts. But there are various bits of that cash that get kind of divvied off and pushed into different directions. So it's not an exact science. So that's why it's worth raising that point, because I knew that was going to be something that would come up. Adam, I mean, I guess as Paddy alluded to there, that left back search now as well. If and I would agree with you guys, by the way, I think it probably does need a a transfer solution, and I think a loan probably is the best avenue for that, because long term, again, you don't really need to add another body to what is already a big squad. It's just about, you know, and again, a lot of this, I guess, is hypothetical, because let's say in best case scenario, it turns out that, and you know, let's hope this is the case, it's 6 weeks. Can you muddle through 6 weeks with what you've got? Probably. Can you muddle through 6 months with what you've got? Probably not. So there will be an element of that. And if it is on the spectrum where I think we all expect it to be in terms of months, I think that means you're going to have to go and get another body in. And yeah, I think it feels like a loan, maybe in the same mould that they did Lewis Dobb in a couple of Januaries ago, that would make sense. And then maybe you could attach an option and whatnot. But that does, I think, feel where my head is at tonight. And we'll obviously see how that evolves in the next couple of days. But as Paddy says, one that does feel like it's evolving and moving is that left-back search, which... And we've discussed so much about that as well. It's been complicated. It's been difficult. And we know they've looked at permanents and loans and different age profiles. It's going to be really interesting to see who emerges. That by the time people watch this, it may well have emerged who that is. But it's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. And I think the supporters will be glad to see somebody come in the door, because I kind of maybe got the sense within the last week or so there's maybe been a little bit of frustration bubbling under about the fact that Norwich haven't managed to land someone yet. But... yeah, it's difficult because they have got left backs, two of which were in the building at the start of pre-season, both of which have done relatively well over the course of pre-season. Then you get the Lucien Mahovo blow for 3 months, and you know they're obviously going to add one anyway, but I think that probably does maybe change it a little bit. And there's obviously a lot of clubs as well in the Championship that are in the market for left backs at the same time as Norwich, and that does make it a very difficult position, because you are ultimately battling up against teams in the same league as you for probably similar profiles or similar players, and they'll have similar targets.
Yeah, and also, sorry to jump in, but you're in a position where you've already got two, so you can't, maybe, if you're another club and you can say, right, you come in and you be our first choice, that's not really where Norwich are at with it.
No, that makes the position even more difficult to try and sell it, because I think we all felt, you know, at the start of the summer, it was going to be tough maybe to, yeah, try and sort of convince somebody to come in and almost be kind of a first, second and third choice, depending on maybe where the other two were at. And unfortunately, their fitness issues are well documented, and that is why Norwich have to dip into the market, because I think in terms of potential and ceiling, Krizene and Mahovo are both good enough and capable of operating at the Championship level, maybe even Premier League eventually if they can kick on in their careers. And I thought you know, last season we saw maybe Krizene start to excel a little bit more under Philippe Clement, and maybe sort of show the flashes of quality that had him in Aston Villa's academy. Mahovo, that the ceiling within certainly the club they feel is very, very high for him, and he's got everything you really want of the modern day fullback. And it's disappointing and a massive shame to see him out again for such a number of months. And given it wasn't, you know, a lot of the issues he had previously, this was just a contact one, it makes it doubly frustrating. But I am intrigued to see who they go with. You know, I probably always felt that a loan would have been a better option, just because of the fact they do have two youngsters on the books already, and you don't really want to get to maybe next summer, and given all the financial points there that Paddy's outlined, do you really want someone permanently who you're tied down to for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years on a contract, which is all playing into the finances? I felt a loan would be a better fit, but clearly they have a lot of options on the table. There is permanent options on the table as well, so it will be intriguing. I probably get the sense it will be maybe an obscure one from overseas, but you know, I think we've maybe felt with even the Brooks deal that didn't really become too apparent that they were going to go for that kind of player until maybe the deal was over the line. So yeah, I think watch this space, and maybe the next sort of 48 hours, a little bit maybe beyond that, will be pretty telling.
Yeah, watch this space on that. The final point, Paddy, before we move on and actually speak about some elements from today's game, because I think there are some interesting bits to discuss. A lot of this summer we've spoken about continuity. That's a key reason why Norwich, and it has been a decision, you've overlaid the financial situation there as well. But, you know, there were levers they could have pulled if they wanted to do more business this summer. So there has been a degree of choice about keeping the squad together and trying to maintain that momentum and take it into the new campaign. But that is dependent on availability and keeping players fit, because if you want to keep that squad, it means you have to get those players, your better players, on the pitch more regularly. They may well go on to do that this season, but that sort of shows the gamble that they are taking with this, isn't it? Because if you want that continuity, that needs to be backed up, as with a lot of their work has been done, with a much improved availability record next season.
Well, that's the key to it, yeah, because you know, as Philippe said to us after the season, you know, pretty much every time he took his place in a dugout, be it Carrow Road or anywhere else in the Championship, he knew 70-80% of these in-game substitutions would be dictated already by player X can only last so many minutes, or, you know, we're going to have to manage that player, this player, back from an injury or to avoid, you know, a relapse of an injury. Very few of his in-game substitutions were actually a reaction to what was unfolding in the game, the tactical elements of it, the game state. And that's not sustainable. And clearly it wasn't, you know, somewhere where he wanted to find himself more often than not this coming season. But the reality is, I think everyone we spoke about in this intervening period on this episode, he is going to be back there again from the start of the season and just managing resource, both to get a 20 on the team sheet for West Brom, but then probably as that game unfolds against the Baggies, taking a lot of his substitutions from, you know, a point where that player can't go 90, so this player's going to have to come out of there, and then that might have a knock-on effect to what he can do in other parts of his, you know, in-game strategy. So, yeah, but the good thing is, and I referenced it earlier, you know, he very adeptly managed to find a route through that maze of player unavailability or player injury, and yet still magnificently this calendar year kept the show on the road and more than that, and ticked over points hauls, which over the entire 46 game season sample would have had them at the very top end of the division. So he's done it once in his time in Norwich. He's going to have to do it again at the outset of this new season. And I think it's worth, you know, reiterating that, you know, there's still quality in those areas. You know, Ben Chrzeny, I think, is maybe an underrated asset for me in many.
He's really come on.
He has, yeah. And again today, you know, physically you look at him and he's every bit of an athlete as Mahovo for me. And, you know, there's elements of his game, of course, he has to work on. But I think he's got something about him. And, you know, I know Kellen Fisher would be the first choice, but Jack Stacey, I've given away the penalty today, but that can happen. But, you know, I think there's a reliability element you'll get from him over a block of games. So I don't necessarily see them having to, you know, roll the dice and hold their breath, as it were, in terms of the start of the season in defensive positions. You've still got a very strong centre with McConville and Cordoba and Harry Darling again. And so there's a settled, in terms of that continuity, that feels as if they've got that still, even allowing for no Fisher, no Mahovo. If Pella is not a serious issue, then him and Kenny will anchor that midfield as they did for the majority under Clement. So, and on and on and on. So, you know, Brooks clearly feels like an upgrade in terms of those three attacking positions. I think Mahoma, if he gets that injury-free run, he can come into his own as well. And let's hope Schwartau can build on, you know, promising signs last season. So it feels doom and gloom. I don't think it is necessarily. And the most important individual in this mix right now is Philippe Clement. And as I say, you know, he's proven himself to be a very good operator, full stop, but particularly when he faces injury adversity. And, you know, that's why I still feel there's enough to be optimistic about, that they can get off to a far better start, and which wouldn't be hard, to be fair, than this time last year. But the ground, if there is ground that they have to make up moving into the season, is nowhere near the chasm it was when he walked through the door in November. I'd be very, very shocked almost if they get to November and they're in the parlous state they were in, you know, when he picked up the reins, injuries or no injuries. So, yeah. So I think you have to, while it is difficult at the moment, particularly in light of the latest injury news around Ali Ahmed, you have to retain that perspective and sort of zoom out a touch and know that this is a very capable, very assured head coach at the helm. And he has plenty of resource that you know, at the start of this season, that's a very, very competitive 11 he can put on the pitch.
Yep, agreed. Let's talk about the game today, because there was a game that happened. Norwich were beaten by Osasuna, although I think it's worth caveating because of that injury. I mean, the last 15 minutes, kind of, I felt the energy, intensity on the pitch, off the pitch, got completely
sucked out of it. But I mean, Paddy mentioned it. I did want to speak about Jacob Wright because today, probably in a microcosm, but I think generally over pre-season, what's encouraged me is kind of what he's added to his out of possession stuff. There's a bit more bite. There's a bit more intensity about him out of possession. If you think about when Philippe Clement came in and spoke about him, he played him as a number 10 largely because of that side of the game. He's still, what, 20, 21 years old, still incredibly young. Does feel like he's taken a step forward in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it was a couple of times, I think, in the first half today where he won the ball back in, you know, sort of good areas of the pitch where you want him to do that. And that does feel like that's been added. And whether it's kind of a mindset thing as well with him, because I remember him speaking, I think, at the back end of last season and sort of saying, you know, there's probably new levels I need to find and there's certain things I need to add because I don't want to be in the boat that I was in last season where I think he only started something like 13 games in the Championship. And, you know, for a young player who, when he arrived through the door on loan initially, you know, got a really good run of games. I think everybody could see the technical quality that he possessed. And when Norwich, you know, exercised their option to bring him back, remember the excitement levels last summer, everybody sort of felt like, yeah, okay, we've got a real asset here, you know, a young English youth international for what felt like a snip. And he probably didn't quite manage to reach those levels last season for varying reasons, you know, the change of head coach and just those that were brought in last summer. You know, Pelle Mattsson obviously stepped up to the plate once Philippe Clement arrived, and Kenny McLean is Kenny McLean, so it's very difficult to dislodge those two, and he found that battle tough. But I think that probably would have actually made him a better player because he, you know, the ego is just, not them saying he had a massive ego, but coming from Man City, stepping into a Norwich team, he probably would have expected to have sort of got more minutes, and that probably maybe just helped him. But yeah, I think if opportunity knocks for him, whether that be through, fingers crossed, not an injury, but an injury, or yeah, just by the fact that he does manage to play himself into the setup, then yeah, I would back him on the basis of what we've seen so far in pre-season to deliver, because he does feel like he's added a lot more because he's got the technical quality. Everybody could see that. He's a very good footballer, and you know, he's a dangerous player as well from set pieces. I think, you know, when it comes to corners and free kicks, we obviously saw him score the one at St Gallen, and he's come close a couple of other times as well. And even his corner delivery is probably up there with one of the best in the squad. So he's got a lot of attributes you want from a footballer and a midfielder. And yeah, I'm excited to see sort of where this season could go for him. You know, fingers crossed that he can get himself a bit more game time and yeah, prove kind of why I think Norwich fans were so excited when he walked through the door.
Yeah, and what it would allow Norwich to do and Philippe Clement to do is just manage Kenny McLean a little bit more. Not saying that he needs that, and obviously he can play a lot, but when he's having to play relentlessly every single week, 90 minutes, maybe that doesn't necessarily get the best out of him all the time. So it would be good to, yeah, if there was a game where Norwich were in the lead, they could introduce Jacob Wright into those deeper positions, and kind of has felt about trust, doesn't it? And it feels like he's gone a long way to establishing that. What did you make of the game overall, Paddy? And I guess probably crucially, as we build into some of the competitive stuff, and we've seen the bulk of pre-season barring that Fulham game, we're not going to be there on Tuesday, unfortunately, for Cambridge, it doesn't sound like. Do you feel Norwich are in a good place to kind of begin the competitive stuff? And obviously that cup game now against MK Dons, that's coming into focus quickly.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there was a period in the first half day and kind of then Philip post-match said, you know, and it's, you know, Spanish teams from the national team downwards, but if you allow them that possession, then that you won't see the ball for a period of time, and by definition, you're not going to be able to create too much in the final third. And I felt there was a period in the first half that was the case, 15, 20 minutes. And Philip referenced that kind of more broadly in his post-match analysis. But, I mean, he felt Norwich were the better side, and that was an unjust result. I mean, it was a very cheeky finish, but it, you know, it was deep in stoppage time, and I didn't think there was a huge amount between the sides in truth. But, you know, it's top flight Spanish opposition, so, you know, it's probably to be expected that there was going to be periods when they were going to be tested out of possession. And you know, as I think now, I don't recall, I mean, there was one or two reasonable stops from Kovacevic, but I wouldn't say it was a string of gravity-defying efforts required. So in the main, I felt that there was good structure to Norwich and good control. Yeah, I'd agree about Wright as well. I thought he was good. I thought, you know, we touched on it, Krasny already. I think you could see glimpses of Brooks and how exciting he will be if they can get the ball to him early. I think that's the key. If he can, you know, have plenty of field to attack sort of opposition fullbacks, I think there's going to be a lot of excitement when he gets the ball at Carrow Road. You feel it. You can sense it in the crowd. They feel things are going to happen with a player like that. So all in all, you know, I think Philippe's sense, more importantly than ours, was that, you know, he felt it was another positive link in that pre-season chain. And as you said, it's all about being ready for, you know, not today, not Sandgallen a couple of weeks ago or any other pre-season outing. It's to a lesser extent MK next Saturday, but it's 2 weeks from now and it's West Brom in the Championship. And I think he strikes me as a coach who is very happy with what they've achieved, putting the injuries to one side, but very happy with the work they've done, the tactical work, the physical fitness work, what he's seeing in terms of putting that into practice, into the games. It's just, you get that underlying sense from him as much as any fan, that just that frustration that he can't unleash a Cernak, you can't unleash a Jallo, you can't now be building up Jovan Mikama, which I'm sure he would have hoped at the start of pre-season would be the case. So that feels a little bit of a drag to what has been quite a lot of positive signs for me in pre-season. But, you know, the proof will be when, you know, we're sat here in 2 weeks' time and we're dissecting that opening day against West Brom, and hopefully it's a positive one.
Yes, let's hope so. Adam, I guess in terms of pre-season generally as well, your kind of thoughts and reflections, your takeaways, maybe some high points as well. How are you feeling heading into the competitive stuff?
Yeah, I think relatively positive, you know, for all the reasons really we've spoke about in a lot of the recent podcasts. It's very difficult to draw too many kind of firm conclusions from pre-season, because once it kind of gets around to the competitive action, your view maybe of certain things change very quickly. And yeah, it's obviously a very different environment as well, playing in the Championship, you know, competitive action compared to, no disrespect, but King's Lynn and Colchester at Colney. So yeah, I think there's still bits to probably do and improve on, but I think defensively there feels like there's, well, they've certainly done that actually in the second half of last season, made themselves a lot more resolute, and kind of the against record that in terms of the concessions of goals definitely dropped a lot compared to where they were at the start of last season, where they were so fragile and conceded goals that, you know, so sort of a lot of simple goals really that they probably could have easily prevented. And it feels like they've done that so far this pre-season. Today's probably the first couple of goals they've actually conceded. They've, you know, got to a point where they had managed to keep clean sheet after clean sheet after clean sheet, and that's good for sort of those boys at the back, just in terms of positive momentum and sort of, yeah, confidence really. And I think a lot of those have actually stepped up to the plate. Harry Darling's been one of, if not, I'd say one of the most impressive performers over the course of pre-season. It feels like he's really sort of come back with a sort of renewed belief, and he wants to try and get himself back in the frame after, you know, being a largely third choice over kind of the second half of last season due to McConville's kind of rise into the team, and Cordoba proving himself to be a very good defender at this level consistently, which is probably the one thing he didn't really have, I'd say, in sort of the previous 18 months he'd had at Carrow Road. And yeah, I think that, you know, Brooks, not seen a lot of him, unfortunately, only two sort of 45 minutes, but thought he was very good against St Gallen. Today, yeah, there were some flashes of why Norwich have ultimately brought him into the football club, and that is because he can prove himself to be a good player at this level, at Championship level, and I'm excited to see what he can do with more game time, and once he gets more rhythm with a lot of the teammates as well, and even some of those sort of in the other sort of areas of the pitch, like, you know, Matthias up front. I think, you know, maybe there would have been a lot of expectation internally, externally, probably everywhere really, that he would have been one who could have been moved on this summer, whether that be on loan or permanently. But yeah, he's come back fighting fit, looks a lot fitter, leaner, just sort of ready to go really. And as much as he's maybe not scored the goals over pre-season, I think he's done enough in terms of his pressing play and everything else to kind of push himself into the frame. And given Mikama's injury, obviously he's going to be unavailable for the first few games, then Touré only sort of came on today for his first minutes of pre-season. It feels like he's probably going to get the shirt for at least the first couple of competitive games, so it's up to him to take it. And you know, I think probably if maybe luck would have been on the side a little bit more in the last stage of last season, when he did get that run in the team due to injury, he would have had a few more goals. And it does feel like him, once he gets a few, then he'll score some more. So yeah, I think there's enough to be positive about, but unfortunately the injuries will overshadow some of it.
Yeah, indeed. Paddy, just finally, I guess, obviously squad numbers were released. No number nine. Does that mean anything at all?
No number nine. That's what it means, yeah. I mean, I was off for a few days, but I think from the soundings from you boys, it's maybe just a little reminder that, you know, the number nine, both in terms of numerically, but also, you know, the mythical number nine, that's still up for grabs. You know, who is going to be that player? And I don't know. when I saw that, you know, I didn't immediately, to go back to the last segment about finance, I didn't immediately think they're going to go and push the boat.
Yeah,
no, I knew that wasn't the scenario. Well, my own thought process was maybe that is, you know, Clement, just in terms of the man management, he's not going to bestow the nine, which, you know, is your traditionally your you know, leading man, your master marksman, your goal poacher, supreme, whatever. Maybe that's just a little signal that, you know, you just, it's over to you lads. Prove effectively by performances on the pitch from here that you are Norwich's number nine in that sense. And you know, we'll see. I mean, the thing is, they can't, unless I've been made unaware of a new rule change, I don't think they can, like, mid-season hand out the nine, can they? So they are.
They signed one, I guess.
No, well, that's it.
Maybe a left back comes in and he decides.
Okay. You never know, the modern game and all that. So
William Gallas, he was number nine for Arsenal once.
Was he? Yeah. So in terms of the striking options, then they'll have to, you know, if it's at Norwich, and it's going to be another 12 months. So, you know, maybe that's just a little mind game from head coach to McCarmer to Torre to maybe less so Chris Gordon, but you know, that in the head coach's mind, all bets are off as it stands right here, right now, and as a result, nobody's going to be wearing that number nine, but definitely not a £10 million plus striker anytime soon.
It's quite an interesting, from a psychological perspective, that, isn't it? Because I guess there probably is truth in, if you're Mo Torre or Jovan Mikama and vice versa, and one of you gets the number nine, there probably is that sense of, okay, well, that means he's first choice. I think there is an interesting kind of psychological point to that. And the race is on to try and grab that. Adam, finally, you informed us, I mean, we should know really, but you informed us before we record, it's your birthday tomorrow, Sunday.
It is.
Happy birthday in advance. We're not going to sing for you, we won't put you through that. Any particular plans or specialities? What's going to be on your cake? That's obviously the most important question.
Well, my partner was actually baking me a cake this afternoon, so
flavour?
I think it's a chocolate Guinness cake, which I must admit I'm quite partial to. Don't have it very often because it's not something you sort of see out and about, but I'll put my neighbours at fault for that, because lovely couple they are, quite an elderly couple, but they go to Beckles Market on Saturday, and they tend to go to the cake store, and sometimes they do bring us a chocolate Guinness cake back from it, so that's kind of where my taste for it has come from. I just requested a cake, or got told I would be made a cake, and just got asked flavours. I gave a few options, and I believe it's that, so got that to look forward to. But yeah, I think when you get older, you just become less bothered about your birthday, to the point that I've been crazed by every family member about what I want, and it's just, once you get older, there's not really a lot you do want, so you just kind of leave it to their own devices to sort. But I have a spot of lunch tomorrow somewhere, and we'll see a few family out and about, and then once it's all over and done with, probably the better.
You'll have a new sock drawer, you'll smell amazing next week. That'll be the main thing. We better let Adam get home to that chocolate and Guinness birthday cake. Thank you very much for watching and for listening. We'll be back next week after that Carabao Cup first round tie against MK Dons. And hopefully, fingers crossed, just no more injuries, please. See you soon.